Welcome to Radio Oldie, brought to you by Bailey Gifford. This is a recording from the monthly Oldie Literary Lunch at the National Liberal Club. To book a ticket, please go to www.theoldie.co.uk/lunches. Our next speaker is a model to all oldies in the room. Lady Glen Connor first came to prominence in 1953 as a maid of honour at the Queen's coronation, and she was at the King's coronation 70 years later. She was a lady-in-waiting to Princess Margaret, and then at the astonishingly early age of 87, she had a mega hit with her book, Lady-in-Waiting, My Extraordinary Life in the Shadow of the Crown, which has sold 1.5 million copies in 34 countries. And she puts 17-year-olds to shame. She's written 5 books in 5 years. She's appeared in 4 seasons of The Crown. And her new book is Manners and Mischief, an A to Z of a Life Lived Well. Ladies and gentlemen, Lady Glen Connor.
Well, here I am. I'm a perfect person for the Oldie. Now, I don't think they've ever probably had anybody writing for their first book when they were 87. And the reason I wrote it was that my dear husband made an absolutely shitty will and left nothing to me or the children. And I was just luckily sitting one summer next door to a young publisher. And I was ravaging away, like I'm going to do to you, really. And he said, have you ever written a book? I said, of course not. I can't type. I can't do anything. So he said, no, it's your voice we want. So off I went. And I sat in my... I knew what I wanted to write, and then I talked. And it was, and then... Anyway, all I can say is that Lady in Waiting suddenly came out, and to my absolute amazement, it was a bestseller. And I've never stopped since. I've done now 6 books in 6 years. Most people take years to write a book, but I was never given that chance. I can see somebody over there. The great thing, they had some pine signs in their eyes, my publishers, is get as much as possible out of her while she's still alive. Anyway, I will then start slightly with my life. I've been extremely fortunate. I was born an aristocratic. I was brought up in one of the big stately homes of England, Holcombe, which perhaps some of you have met. But the only thing, of course, then was I had a wonderful early childhood. And then the war came, and my father was in the Scots Guards. He was also an equerry to the Duke of York at that time. I was with him all the time during the abdication, which is very interesting because, the Duke of York was appalled at the idea of becoming king. And if it hadn't been for the Queen Mother, I don't know what would have happened. But my father used to spend a great deal of time retrieving waste paper baskets that the king had kicked across the room. And, of course, the other thing about the king was that he had a stutter, and he found it very, very difficult to communicate with people, which also made it difficult. But the Queen Mother was amazing, and of course, so was Princess Margaret, actually. And the thing about Princess Margaret, because as you know, never stops in the newspapers, the spare, and Princess Margaret was the spare, actually, and she behaved perfectly. She never criticised the Queen, she was always very, they rang each other up a lot. And, quite soon, Prince Charles was born. She wasn't the spare, but she was for some time. And the only thing she minded about was that, I often said to her, what's he like? Being brought up with somebody that you knew was going to be queen. And she said, what I really minded about was not being educated like the queen. Because the queen was educated. She had people from Oxford, Cambridge, Eton. Princess Margaret said she just had a sort of smelly old French mistress that she was taught the piano. And actually, Princess Margaret was very clever. She's very, very well read. And she played the piano beautifully. She sang. And I think if she hadn't been born a princess, she probably would have gone on the stage. And maybe if someone my books you've read that we used to do a lot of amateur theatricals. Not that I was ever asked. I was the one getting people into their costumes, putting on extra buttons. But in my new book, that I hope you'll all buy, in a way, having written six books, and the first one I didn't quite know what to write about. Now I haven't, that's why it's called Mischief, I'm afraid. I've just written what I really feel. And some of the stories are quite funny and quite naughty, actually. Princess Margaret, in the book, there are two photographs. One of Princess Margaret is Brunhilde, wonderful. And the twins, one of my daughters here, they were mini Brunhildes. And the other one was of Mae West, when she was absolutely fine, come up and see me sometime. And she loved that bit. And she loved her. And of course, we introduced her to Roddy. Roddy was not really meant for her. We had a big house party at Glen, and one of the young men had fallen out. And I rang, at those days, everybody left London. There was nobody in London, everybody was on holiday. So I rang an old aunt of Colin's, said, do you know anybody that might come up? Not for Princess Margaret, but just to make the party. And she said, well, there's a very charming young man called Roddy Llewellyn. I think he's in London. So I rang him. I've never spoken to him before. And I said, we'd love you to come up. And I was actually, my job, sort of getting the house ready for them. And Colin, my son, with Princess Margaret, went into Edinburgh to meet Roddy off the train. And you're always told before a member of the royal family arrives back, you're always telephoned that they're just about to arrive. So there I was waiting on the doorstep. I thought it's very odd, because when they left, Princess Margaret was sitting next to Colin. She didn't seem to be when they arrived. My son was. And then a car drove up. There was Princess Margaret and Roddy in the back seat. It was just like that. And of course, I was horrified. I said to Colin, what have we done? Anyway, what was very nice, though, at Princess Margaret's funeral, the Queen had a wake at Windsor. And one of the ladies in waiting came up and said, oh, the Queen would like to speak to you. So I went up, sort of, and she thanked us, for giving Princess Margaret such a wonderful life. In Musteek, we helped her build the house. And right at the end, she looked at me and she said, and for introducing her to Roddy. I thought that was very generous of her, And she couldn't have said that, I don't think, if Princess Margaret had still been alive. But anyway, to get on with it, well, I've nearly finished my royal life. Anyway. But I am a great friend of the King's, because when he was a little boy, my mother was a lady-in-waiting to the last Queen, and because she'd never been to school, she'd never had mumps or measles or any of the sort of childhood diseases. And Prince Charles used to be sent up when he had mumps or anything like that with his nanny to Holkham. Because my mother being a lady-in-waiting, and they got on so well. And she taught him how to pot, because she had a pottery, my mother. And my father taught him to fish for eels. And I got this story in my book, that when my father said to him, have you ever eaten eel? So he's about 10 years old, I suppose. And he said, no. So my father said, marched him off to the kitchen. Well, there's something about eels. If you cut them, the nerves still wriggle about. And of course, they put them in this pan, and the eels started to go off onto the floor. And I've talked to Prince Charles about it. He said, I thought I was going to be sick, he said. But luckily it wasn't. And he wrote, this very polite little boy, to my mother, saying, I really enjoy the eels, especially in butter. So that was all right. But I've been so lucky that he's still a great friend of mine, the King's, and he wasn't allowed to ask all that many people to his coronation. I think about 120 of his closest friends. And because I suppose I was the only person that was part of the Queen's coronation, and most of the, sadly, two of the girls I was with have died, two have got Alzheimer's. So it's me and sort of one other who doesn't do much speaking. And so I was asked, And I happened to sit next, I don't know who it was, but there was a sort of thing saying, you can't sit on the seat next door to me. And it turned out to be John Kerry, who I think at one point was trying to be president of the United States.
Yes.
And a great friend of his, Shaw. Anyway, I sort of said, hi, hello, you know, and he told me who he was and why he was there. And he said, and who are you? And I said, well, actually, I was part of the coronation in 53. And he wrote me a lovely letter afterwards saying he couldn't have sat next to anybody better because I was able to tell him exactly what was going to happen. And so many people say, what was the difference of the two coronations? What do you think? Well, of course, they were very different. I mean, when I was part of the Queen's coronation, I was just after the war. I mean, the Queen's so beautiful. I remember waiting for her in the door of the Abbey, and suddenly, round the corner, we could hear her coming because everyone was shouting and clapping, and this golden coach is pouring with rain, which in a way made it more sort of amazing. And it was like a Disney film, round the corner, and then the coach stopped, and two pages opened it, and we were the very first people, four of us, to see her in her amazingly beautiful dress. And she was divine. I mean, she had a wonderful figure, wonderful complexion, her eyes. I mean, she's so beautiful. The Duke of Edinburgh got out the other side. But I think partly the Duke of Edinburgh wanted to, in a way, to have a tiny part in it and to make it all sort of go according to him, which made him actually rather fussy because we knew exactly what to do. He was slightly maddened by him because he kept on saying, and, you know, and we carried the train. She didn't say anything to us. And we got the Duke of Norfolk then, Bernard Norfolk, was fantastic. And he had arranged the late King's coronation just before the war. So he knew exactly what to do. And he put this little sort of piece of cotton on the set. And we stood there. And she had her back to us. And the train came over our hands. It had a little sort of satin handle. And we were just waiting. And then, of course, she just turned around and she said, ready, girls. And off we went, you know. And it was like a sort of medieval tapestry because the whole of the abbey had been built up right up to the ceiling, you know. And all the people were in their national dress. There was a problem, which maybe I might go into. We've all had lunch, but I'm still going to say it. There's only one lavatory. all these people. And it was right at the back, and all the page boys had milk bottles to pee in. And I believe, I was told, that right up in front, I'm afraid people will use their handbags. So when I was asked at the King's coronation, I was asked by the Daily Mail to write, obviously, about the Queen's coronation and the King's. Queen's was easy, but I knew we couldn't leave the Abbey until about 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and the mayor was ringing me up at 7. So I did just get back and wrote something, but it wasn't nearly as good as what I wrote about the Queen. 3 days later, May here rings up and said, Mum, Buckingham Palace wants to get in touch with you. My heart sank. I thought, well, I'm going to be hauled over the coals now, you know, perhaps for writing something I shouldn't. But it was to have dinner with the King. So 3 days after the coronation, I had dinner alone with the King at Wood Farm in Norfolk. And when I came into the room, he said, how was it, Anne? And I said, magnificent.
Oh.
I mean, it was different. Of course it was different. Because... I knew I was going to get that dreaded thing. Anyway, and it was different, obviously, because it wasn't built up. There weren't nearly so many people. He was only allowed to ask 120 of his friends. But it was different. And, of course, there were women. What I said was interesting for the Queen's coronation, we, six of us, were the only women. But at the King's coronation, there were gallants in the choir, there was the wonderful Penny Mordaunt with her sword, you know. But the music was wonderful. The King had done all the music himself and had taken a great interest in it. So anyway, I'm so lucky to have been able to go. Now, 2 more minutes? I just want to. You're such a lovely audience.
30 seconds.
I can see you all looking at me. It's wonderful. But I speak quite often, and some audiences aren't quite so easy. I did one in Vienna the other day where nobody spoke English, I don't think. So completely blank faces. Anyway, thank you so much for listening to me.
You have been listening to Radio Aldie, brought to you by Bailey Gifford. Why not get 3 trial issues of the Aldie magazine for just £1? Sure you'll enjoy it. We'll then charge you £25.75 for every 6 issues. Just go to checkout.theoldie.co.uk/offers and enter old trial as one word in capitals. That's checkout.theoldie.co.uk/offers and enter old trial.